You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James. I'm here today with my co-host, Mr. Luke LaCoy.
Hello.
Now, I'm sorry, guys. I lied to all the listeners because I said Luke wasn't going to be here anymore, and I was wrong about that. Right, Luke?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, he was supposed to be having a baby. Well, not him. He doesn't have a baby because that's not how biology works. But his wife was supposed to have a baby, and it still hasn't happened yet. So we're
just patiently baby, waiting Luke? Every day. First baby, first, yep.
That's why. My wife was 13 days over.
All right.
Wow. Okay.
I there did a tight 10 minutes in the living room, though. She delivered. No trouble. So you might want to try that.
So now that he's on their show, I didn't even get to do a good intro for you, Mr. James. Like, I was excited. So one of the great comedians of Canada, and actually, if you've ever seen Tommy Boy, you've seen him in it. He's done a lot of stuff, including Ernest Rides Again, which I love.
Whoa! No kidding. You brought it up.
Ernest movies when I was a kid. I love those. So there's so much here. It's funny because I was, like I said, I was watching your stand up and I was like, I know him from somewhere. Where do I know him from? I just started digging and I'm like, okay, there you go. So I've seen you before. Your stand up is amazing, by the way.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. So. Coming from a young American, because, you know, that means a great deal to me, because Canadians are always one to tell you that should you cross the border, they won't get you, Ron. So I concentrated on making sure I drank for free above the tree line. Well, but thank you. I'm glad you say that. Thank you.
One of the greatest set of comedians in the world is Kids in the Hall. They're Canadian too. So
I don't
know.
Aren't they great? And yeah, good guys. Yeah. Hard workers. And in the days when I was at Second City in Toronto, that's where I started, there were rumors of these kids absolutely flipping the psychic paradigm of comedy down the road. And I mean, you know, we were just performing inoffensive satire for suburbanites coming in, looking to drink some foolish firemen and have a night in a hotel. And so, and then you go see I saw the first Kids in the Hall show, which I believe my friend Paul Myers wrote about in his book on Kids in the Hall, which is an excellent book. I watched them and I went, well, this is something entirely different.
Yep.
And they're one of my favorites. By Keith Johnston, and of course by Del Close, and the fact that they're recording a new 6 1-hours mm-hmm. for Amazon is testimony to their longevity, just like SCTV.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, and that's the thing, is that there is a lot of comedians and a lot of people that have come from Canada that have then been successful in America. So there's you know,
we're, a lot.
A lot.
I mean, you know, you're not really successful in Canada unless you're drinking deep from Lady Liberty's milk-laden mammary. And that's
true.
The truth. You know, I mean, 80% or 82% of our country lives so close to the border, we're looking up Lady Liberty's skirt. So it only stands to reason. And of course, Second City, where I started, although I'm from Nova Scotia, which was a bit of an anomaly for you know, the Torontonians had this, you know, salty son of the sea showing up. But there was always the progress into Saturday Night Live from there, although I didn't make it, but a guy in my cast did, Mike Myers, who joined when we were already veterans in the touring company. This luminescent Celt stepped into our touring company van with a case of Coke, a child suitcase, a bottle of Tums, a soccer ball, and the collected works of Harold Pinter.
Wow.
So, you know, anyway, I taught him a lot.
No, that's awesome. I mean, there's plenty of great comedians and plenty of great people that have come from Canada that have brought us everything we have. I mean, we get Captain Kirk is from Canada. William Shatner is from Canada.
He is. Not the old Captain Kirk. I worked with him in that series I did, my talk show.
Oh, yeah.
And that was way back in 1990, and Canada got a new flag in 1963, and I still don't think he knew he did.
That's so
anyway,
awesome.
He's still working, but anyway, carry on. I'll let you answer your ask your questions, rather.
Well, okay, so that's a good question. It sounds like you started improv, but did you start how did you get started in comedy? What was your kind of idea to be like, hey, I should do something in comedy? What got sparked that interest?
I was at university in 19, I'm 63. So I was at Acadia University, a small college in Eastern Canada. And in 1977, I used to watch Don Kirshner's rock concerts late at night. And then something else took place. It was called Saturday Night Live. Mm. And I saw the first cast and I went, boom, that's it. And I didn't realize that you needed to have a carnivore's appetite for red meat in order to survive in that arena. I just wanted to be funny.
Right.
And, you know, the hash would come in on Friday nights. We'd do a couple of hot knives. They'd give some to James and I talked for 3 hours. I just freeform. And of course now, I mean, there's none of that in my life. But when I was a 22-year-old freshman or sophomore, I was channeling my muse and I took a couple of theater courses. I was in some plays. I did well, but really my spirit and my mojo were stoked the most when I was just riffing. And I didn't realize that that was the beginning then, because there was no infrastructure at all for stand-up where I was. Maybe an old Irish dude telling jokes in front of a band before they started, but there wasn't the infrastructure or the respect for the form that I'd witnessed on television. Those great summer replacement shows when I was 16 years old, Richard Pryor show, Smothers Brothers were still on, and Jonathan Winters had his replacement show, which was, even today, if you can find it, it's genius.
It is.
And of course, like anybody of my era, I listened to Carlin's albums and then Greg, and I even Cosby in the early days, and then I graduated toward when the form began to change and Robin Williams put out his first album, Reality, What a Concept. Once again, that also shifted the paradigm. Mm-hmm. And there's been, I feel very fortunate to have been witness to the stages of the art form making these changes. And then eventually I moved to Toronto after graduating with a degree in history. I auditioned for Second City a couple times. I got in and I've never had to work a Joe job since. Although if COVID continues to keep my province in a headlock, I might be bartending again. But well, I've got a big tour. I mean, we got the Delta variant loose up here now.
Yeah, we do too.
Yeah, you guys too. So, and then there's new. So theaters are getting cold feet, even though we have vaccination passports. And then there's the hidden variable, of course, of whether the audience is going to be comfortable enough. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I got into Second City, the touring company, 2 years there. Then I was with Main Stage. Then I did what every journeyman actor in Second City does. Commercials, guest stars, things like that, and moved to LA. And now I'm talking to you because it was Los Angeles and the cancellation of a show I went down to do and the year and a half of unemployment chasing the sitcom dream that made me realize the individual is responsible for their own happiness. And during that tenure, threw my name in the hat at Ventura Boulevard Coffee Houses and started writing what would become my first one-man show that changed my life. I had a wife and a young daughter at the time and came back. We had another one. That's when I did Ernest. Gave me a little bit of wind in my sails, was able to pay off debts. But mostly, I learned that I got to put pen to paper and make sense of the world on my own terms.
I love that. I love that. Your style is great because you add noises and effects and whatever. You remind me, like, Tim Allen was one of the first comedians I was ever really exposed to.
He's great in his day.
Yeah, and he would make noises and stuff, too, a lot with his things, and you do that as well. And it's just so good to see. I've never been able to do that. That's not really a thing that I can do on stage. I can't bring that because I feel awkward doing that. But you make it so natural. How did you do? Is it your improv background that made that simple?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And standards. And I think that you have to, it's mandatory, excuse me, to structure an eclectic buffet lay out an eclectic buffet for the audience. I also love the way words trip off the tongue and tickle the ear as well as the funny bone. I mean, I've got some Trump rants that I was at the top of my game when the Orange Mutant was at the helm. And I'm very proud of those Trump rants on YouTube because they were complex, alliterative rants that said a lot, but ultimately always landed on the laugh.
Okay.
And in a Second City show in the old days, we had serious two-person relating scenes, more or less. We also had silliness. And we had, in fact, one of the guys in my cast who's in Space Force now, Donnie Lake, one of the quintessential improvisers of his generation. I call him the Fred Willard of his generation, actually.
Ooh, wow.
No, that's, it's an accolade that's, that he is very worthy of. And I mean, went on to write all those shows with Bonnie Hunt. They were writing partners and a salt of the earth person as well. I mean, you know, we'd have the silly and then we'd have the serious, we'd have the cast scenes, but ultimately, the thing I took from that place, although it was a Machiavellian minefield of competition and political foolishness, were standards. And then from that kernel of Del Close's statements, play to the top of your intelligence, I incorporated that into my stand-up. But it took a long time. It took a long time to blend the silly with the serious and the alliterative with the joke. I've been in the game 25 years in stand-up, but I will say, you know, people say improv and stand-up very similar. Not so. Different sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. An improv, it's basically six Bolsheviks trying to pick the color of a tractor on a communist farm, where stand-up is an enlightened dictatorship. And it's you and the audience and the control. And I sweat bullets the first few years trying to fit my perspective into those 8 to 10 minutes, which made it very difficult for me to, although I eventually did several concerts there and performed 7 times the infamous Just for Laughs Festival. But it took a while, and it takes a while. And that's why I said in the book, you know, the first hammer a carpenter picks up, he doesn't build a mansion. And the first year's worth of great sets a comedian has, he doesn't get an hour special.
That's right. I wish more comedians actually remembered that or, like, would take that advice, because too many of them go, all right, I made people laugh in the open mic. I have a great 5 minutes. When am I going to be on Netflix? When am I going to get my HBO special?
I hear that here, too.
Yeah,
speaking of, like, Netflix, I'll tell you something. It's interesting.
All right.
You're always singing for your supper, brother. So SCTV, 4 years ago now, God, it's gone so fast. They're doing the Netflix special at the Elgin Theater in Toronto, a great old vaudeville house that holds 2,500. It's where I performed when Conan O'Brien came up to save us from SARS. And everybody was telling me then, oh, Ron, the phone's going to be ringing off the hook. Didn't. I killed. I mean, it's nice to look over at the band who's seen more comedians than you can imagine and see the drummer who plays for Springsteen laughing his ass off at a bit I did. I thought, okay, I'm taking that home, right? And it's fuel for a long road travel. Anyway, speaking of Netflix, so I get asked to do audience warm-up for the SCTV special for Netflix.
Nice.
Martin Scorsese's directing. Jimmy Kimmel is monitoring. And everybody's there except, of course, the deceased John Candy. So I go out. I'm supposed to do 10. I think I did 15, maybe more. Slade said, wow, that's good. Came backstage, it was done. Compliments, good. I go, let me watch the show from the wings. Standing from the wings. And this guy looks down at me, spoke 6'7". Got a multi-millionaire's haircut. If you can imagine. Because that was a very good set. I said, thank you very much. I know who it is. It's Ted Sarandos. Head of Netflix, worth $6.3 billion.
Wow.
And he looks down from the height as only the patriarchal height is only a $6.3 billion individual can. He said, that was a great set. I said, well, you've seen a lot of great comedy. He said, yes, I have. And that was a great set. And I thought, wow, man, I'm 60 years old. I've suddenly got the key to the kingdom after 25 years in stand-up and 42 years in the business.
Yeah.
So there's some minion beside him, right? And she throws one of those surly stink eyes at me that those kind of people who are close to power always do, leads them off.
Oh.
I try to follow it up. I haven't had an agent in 25 years, so I had nobody to beat the bushes for me. And as I said in the book, I said, they say that age is just a number. But in television, if that number's over 50, it's got COVID. So, and I'm not bitter. It's a reality.
Right.
It's just a reality. And, you know, I did 9 one-hour specials on CBC, and they were New Year's tradition. They had a great spot on New Year's Eve, 9 o'clock, sweet spot. And we'd shoot them in front of a live theater audience, had a nice casino gig down in Niagara Falls with, you know, 3,000 in the theater. And they did, for Canada, this is a huge number.
Yeah.
They did 1.4 million viewers every New Year's.
That's great.
So I was canceled a couple of years ago. And they said it was a budget thing, but it wasn't. You don't cancel somebody who's got those numbers. If they're getting the numbers, then you keep them. So I assume it had something to do with age. And that's okay. But what irked me was they never gave that slot to an aspiring young comedian, some incendiary young voice, some indigenous, referred to as indigenous people here. I know you still use the term Indian in America. And that's not to degrade you, but I know Indians in America even call themselves Indians, American Indians.
Right.
But here it's indigenous. I mean, we've got, there's great issues that need to be addressed. And if comedy's function is to speak truth to power, then that's, they must hold them to account. But you know, I read that autobiography on Richard Pryor a couple years ago, bro. And it's pretty good, you know? And who was really the incendiary voice of my generation? Now, I was a white guy.
Right.
So I can't imagine how great his voice must have been for black people. As Cornel West said, Richard Pryor is the freest black man in America. And, but George Carlin is driving with Pryor's manager at one point. This just stayed with me. And he said, where would we be without HBO? And now Netflix, I don't know, seems cookie cutter, all the different specials.
Yeah.
It's pumping them out, man. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. We always had exemplary production value in my specials, and they were an event, and I'm proud of them. And I worked with two wonderful writers. Well, no, three actually. When Dad passed away, Pete Zedlacker came in too. Scott Montgomery and Paul Pogue, good buddies. We'd written for a long time together. And it was a great experience, and they made me a better comedian. So any comedians out there listening who are proprietary about their work to the point where you don't want anyone else saying anything, you're doing yourself a great disservice.
Yep.
You should have somebody you trust and somebody who's just as funny and doesn't have a hidden agenda and isn't jealous, all that sort of crap. But you got to trust your friends, man. You got to be cruel. You got to be cruel with yourself. You can't hang on to the same bit just because you like it. You know, the old adage, kill your children, boom, out the window.
That's right.
Makes you better.
We just read, we just did Stephen King's On Writing, and that was his big thing, is Kill Your
Darlings. Isn't that a great book?
Yep.
And you know what? I have this pin on my desk. Don't come to it lightly.
There you go.
I wrote 275 pages of that book, and I threw the first version out. And I thought to myself, how does that man, how does any writer pump it out so consistently on such a level of excellence like that man does?
Yeah, he's amazing.
Anyway, it's a great book. Did you interview him?
And I wish that would be just so awesome. I wish we had that reach. We don't have that reach yet. We're getting there. Sure. Luke, you had a question?
We read that book, and recently I read John Cleese's book on creativity, and that's one of my favorites as well.
I was supposed to do a film with him in Canada here last month.
Oh, wow.
Honest to God Almighty, it's called Cut the Painter. John Cleese wrote it. He was starring in it. We were shooting it up north with this wonderful director by the name of Stephen Wallace, who did the last picture with Burt Reynolds called Defining Moments. Beautiful picture. And it was the first time I'd been on a film set since working with him several years ago. And I was playing a small town doctor opposite police and one of Canada's great actors, Eric Peterson, who he worked with a couple of years ago. And anyway, there was a COVID scare in the crew. We had torrential rains and a lot of stuff was shot outside. And I think the antibiotics that John was taking for an infected foot compromised his energy. Mm-hmm. He's 80. Mm-hmm. But I want to read that police book on creativity. And
it's great, yeah.
He's incredible. Mm-hmm. Honors his beliefs, right? Yeah. I cut you off. Carry on.
I want to go a little bit back to Second City. I did the Hollywood program here, which I'm sure it's different now, you know, like how than what the training used to be. But
I didn't know they had a theater there.
It's a very small black box, and I mean, like you couldn't have a meal there and, you know, watch comedy, which is much different from in a lot of the other Second Cities. But I had a teacher there, and I was wondering if he was part of your troupe. Doug Morency.
I know who he is, he was well after me.
Ah, okay.
Well, he's still down there, is he?
Yeah. Well, at least, good. I mean, like, I did the program, I think, like, 5 years ago, but, yeah,
he's a good guy.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah. Oh, good. How about that? That's great.
There's always degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Well, with comedy communities, pretty small, right?
Yeah. That's the truth. What has been the biggest highlights of your career so far up to this point? What thing do you always, if you ever have a bad day, because I know sometimes when I have a bad day, I think about like, oh, this one show was amazing and I'm so lucky I got to do X, Y, or Z type thing. What is that one thing where if you ever have a bad day, you ever kind of feel like a little like, ah, man, I'm not getting to the pinnacle of what I want, or maybe I'm just whatever, struggling with something. What's the one thing that kind of gives you the energy or pumps you up to get back there?
Gee whiz, you know, that's a good question, but I really don't reflect on time spent on stage once it's over. I mean, I've been filling theaters in Canada for 20 years, and it was a victory of baby steps, right? And I got just as jazzed, brother, from filling a room on the frozen lip of Lake Superior on a Sunday night in February, the same night as the Super Bowl.
Wow.
In a mining town. You know, as I did playing for 5,000 people at Caesars in Windsor, Ontario.
Wow.
So, but I would have to say that big casino gig in Windsor with 5,000 and everybody coming from Michigan, right across the river. Mm-hmm. And all the stagehands were going, look, man, I hate to break it to you, but everybody's going to leave after a half an hour. That's what happens. They just leave. And all right. I came backstage. There were three stage managers, the three stage guys there going, nobody left, man. Nobody left. We've never seen that. Nobody left. And it had 2 hours to the minute without a break.
Wow.
And my shows are all 2 hours long. anywhere from 100 to 2 hours. But that meant a lot to me, because if there's one thing they've always reminded me of in Canada, it's that my content is not universal enough. Now, look, I didn't want to go down to Bud Friedman's improv and intro myself and fight my way up at 50, which would have been 13 years ago, for another career. I had two children here. I had a good career going on. I had my television series, and each year after that, I had a special, and the theaters were full. And so I was feeding my own. I was comfortable, and I was happy doing what I was doing, because I learned that 2,000 people laughing in a theater in Edmonton during a snowstorm in February sounds exactly the same as 2,000 people laughing in Vegas when it's warm. But big difference, the money and the travel, man. Look, I've battled blizzards a mountain Yeti wouldn't wander. Right? It's been hairy out there traveling the second greatest national landmass on Earth. I tried to pay it homage in my book, as well as I've certainly paid America homage and the influence your nation had on me as a youngster. It's a great place when you're winning.
Yeah, that is so true. This is eye-opening, because it really makes me feel like there's no one path to anything. There's not, and success for one person is not success for every person.
Correct. Correct. And it's sometimes, how you measure it. What about the satisfaction? That's why so many people are disappointed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that great moment, which I go back to all the time in these interviews. Orny Adams is whining at the back of the club, and Seinfeld just, what's your, my parents, and I'm wasting my life, my friends, you don't know. It's like, shut. And Seinfeld looks, he goes, you're doing what you love, aren't you? Which is it. It's it. And look, man, I came back from LA in 1993, owing the IRS $43,000, being chased down. That was why, I did the Ernest picture then, and that was nice, but come on, man, it's not Goodfellas. It's Ernest, and it didn't exactly springboard me into anything else, but I knew what I'd have to do, which was amateur night again. I'd have to prove myself again.
Yeah.
And you're constantly proving yourself. I got to prove myself again now. COVID. I got to go back out and try to gauge what in the name of sweet dying Jesus people are going to be willing to laugh at. I didn't do a lot of sex content in the show. I've mixed it all up. A little bit of political stuff, memories of growing up, childhood, what's going on in society, cutting a swath through things, midlife, you mix it all up for everybody. But with how polarized and fractured and nutty it's got.
Yeah.
I'm talking to doing a podcast last week, and the guy told me that his buddy was charged by a guy from the audience for making fun of QAnon.
Wow. That's insane.
But let me ask you guys, was it always simmering? Was the madness always on a back burner? I mean, every now and then you could, it started, the third gunman on the grassy knoll, took a Sasquatch, alien abduction. Was that the sediment? Was that the foundation for, Hillary Clinton on a broomstick feeding snatched Republican babies to those couple of giant Jesus lizards living in the basement of the White House?
I forgot who said it, but there was someone that said that it's not that the world has got crazier, it's just that crazy people now have a way to voice their opinions on platforms all around the world. So the internet made it so anything can go out anywhere to anyone. It's a pro and a con, right? It's just like the internet is used for tons of good things and tons of bad things. TV is used for tons of good things.
The anger, too, the the visceral, uncompromising hatred.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is being able to talk to other people and have that conversation to get to know where someone's coming from doesn't work in 240 characters, right? On Twitter or whatever. It's just, you can be as visceral as you want and hide behind your keyboard and say whatever you want to other people.
I steer clear of Twitter.
Yeah, same. But,
you know, I like Facebook. I'm a boomer. And, you know, it's always nice to know how bald and chubby everybody you went to high school with.
That might be the best part of Facebook, actually.
It is. If you'd be my friend, wasn't fond of you in grade six, you know, spick and freak. Not going to sign up now. What's the other one? And I like the whimsy of Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
I can post, geez, I'm in a condo here in Toronto and I'm on the top floor and I had a great crop of tomatoes and hot peppers. And I posted that and it just exploded, right? And so there are good things too, right?
Yes, of course.
There are good things too. I can show a picture of me and my daughters on Facebook hiking on Father's Day, and it's a nice feeling, you know? And I'm not curating anything that's anything other than me. So anyway,
The internet lets people find their tribes, but sometimes, you know, you get sucked down rabbit holes into weird stuff and you can start having weird stuff. It just, that's the internet. I mean, unfortunately, that's the way it is. And now, you know,
twitchy in front of something. I get too twitchy sitting still too long.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's the thing. Yeah. Luke, do you have any more questions?
I did. And then we've gone through a lot. I was interested, like, kind of what you're mentioning, like, now comedians are going back to stand-up. And I feel like I'm kind of, like, rewriting everything myself. And it's like, now not only are we coming back from, you know, being gone for so long, but it's almost like I feel like the added fear is another component of, like, the crowd. So, like, you have to win the crowd over now, but now it's like they're – in most places they're spread out, which doesn't help. And then it's like, yeah, they're having a fun night out, but always in the back of their mind, like, are we going to get sick from doing this? Are we going to be sick from getting outside the house? So it's interesting to see, like, how that's going to affect
performing arts. There's an awful lot of plates spinning, isn't there? We got a lot of plates spinning. Mm-hmm. And I think more than any live performers, we're the ones who are walking the minefield.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're a musician. You can come out. Lyle Lovett is still doing shows from his living room. He can steal his songs. You know, Hyatt can still sing Tennessee Plates and kill.
Yeah.
All the bands can still play their favorite songs. Mm-hmm. What about us as those who connect the dots and make sense of the chaos we're all walking through in the language of laughs when a third of that room might be invested in crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the big thing in LA right now is, I don't know if you guys have this up there, but I just read somewhere that if you want to go do open mics or you want to do certain shows, you have to have your pass vaccine passport thing.
They just introduced that here.
Yeah, so that's gonna limit some people. Where now there are still people out there that are fearful of that. And so I would hate to see a comedian's career be taken away from them because they have a different worldview. I'm not saying right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just saying we shouldn't be being punished for our worldview. Not me per se, but, like, there are a lot of people out there who are still hesitant, and I can understand that.
Very interesting point. Yeah, sacrifice for the greater good is imperative in the face of this pandemic.
But people are also fearful. That's another fear on top of the COVID fear, right? Of, like,
I know people who've ingested every drug known to man, right. And they won't take something from Pfizer. Yeah.
That's true.
I'll take a boner pill, but I'm not gonna shoot myself up with that. You know, I mean, you've already had people dying of that Invectron. What is it?
Oh, the isn't like the cattle.
It's thing, for worms and horses.
Deworming thing. Yeah. That's right. I forgot about that.
I don't usually read Twitter, but Conan had a great joke the other day. It said, "My horse has worms," and they went to the vet, and the only thing that's on the shelf are COVID-19 vaccines. That's such a good joke.
That's funny.
I think that, look, when me trumps we, everybody loses. And in World War II, people had victory gardens. In World War II, people channeled a sense of community spirit. Did you know that Ford had a plant in America that pumped out more tanks a month than the entire Third Reich did in a year?
Yep.
You know, I mean, when Japan cornered the rubber market, 90% of the rubber market, in a year and a half, America invented a product that was synthetic rubber that was 50 times stronger than the real rubber.
Yeah.
I mean, this kind of can do together and move forward. And I mean, that proactive ingenuity your country is synonymous with was very inspiring at a point in time. And so much has changed. Changing here too, you know. I mean, we always prided ourselves on being the peaceable kingdom. And you know, we have several parties here, not two. But the mobs that are greeting Justin Trudeau or Prime Minister, some of the mobs are just hateful. They're exactly like the Capitol mob, only there's less buffalo head helmets.
Makes sense.
So yeah.
Well, yeah. What would
a lot
be
of people dressed as, a lot of people dressed as angry beavers up here.
I might like to see that, actually. I'm not going to lie. That might be a good thing. I think I've seen
a few angry beavers in my day. I'm such a beaver.
If you could go to the young version of yourself just starting in comedy and give them one piece of advice, what would that one piece of advice be?
Life is all about the long haul. Be patient.
Work
hard.
That is wise.
Thank you. I've always had a great work ethic, thanks to my mother and father, born in the dark days of the Great Depression, when the light at the end of that tunnel was the carnage of World War II.
Yeah.
And nothing came for free, and working class, not to say that that's a ticket to hard work. I know a lot of lazy people born into working class families, and a lot of hardworking people born to affluence. But life is all about the long haul, because you want to catch lightning in a bottle, and the industry that we're in praises you, right? Mm-hmm. Look how quickly you're discarded. But see, one of the things in Canada, we don't have a star system, okay? So you're not going to grab a comet to a trajectory of fame where from obscurity you're going to be propelled into a level of interstellar affluence and fame where there's 40-foot billboards of your noggin on Broadway. Right? I mean, but it's also benefited us, because that's why Scientology never really took hold here. Mm. I mean, you know, there's no equivalent of some gone clear Tom Cruise deity telling you that Xenu dropped 10 million of his people into an active volcano 5 million years ago from DC-9s. You're not going to say, hey, come on in. Join us. Everybody's here. Look, there's some more actors.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, no one's going to, this joke won't work for you, but in Canada, no one's going to join a religious cult because Buddy from Murdoch Mysteries told him to. Yeah, I know you wouldn't get that.
It's all good. Well,
it's called Clean Comedy, and I've dropped the F-bomb a couple times.
That's okay. We have editing software.
You don't have a lot of Christian followers, do you?
We have editing software. We do. We have, yeah, we're pretty, we have good followers for that kind of stuff. We try to stay clean. We have done church shows. We do all kinds of stuff. We do everything. So
I do a lot of church material on my show, because Episcopalianism in America is called Anglicanism here, and we're the Church of England. And I used to go to church every Sunday, and there was always four old girls in the front of the church, right? Who just like to show up, wear fancy hats, and pass gas. It was just odious. But I always got mileage on memory. This is what I love. I love the universality of experience, that I can tell a story about going to church with my family in Halifax in 1969. And have somebody at the other end of the country relate to it. Not somebody, a theater of 1,500.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the most redeeming feature of comedy, is the unifying factor that you've got. The world is so fractured. And I've been saying this even before COVID came. World's getting so fractured and so polarized that the comedian steps on stage and gets everybody on the same page for the, whether it's the 10-minute set or the 2-hour set, they're on stage.
Right.
And that's very reassuring. But one of the things, the differences between, I don't know how many Canadians you have watching versus Americans, but with 375 million people in America, you can have half that country hating your act and still have 6 times the population of Canada thinking you're a genius.
Yep.
So, but the club circuit is far healthier there. I've got some buddies who've done really well down there, and they've made a great living on the club circuit, and they're excellent comedians and good people. And but I will say there's always that bittersweet, feeling of, boy, what if I'd have stayed? But yeah. You know what? There's no way that Los Angeles I was in 93, threw my name in the hat at Bud Friedman's Improv on Melrose in January, got on stage in Santa Monica in April, with 30 other people, and I got 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll be working this out, a wife, a daughter to feed. It just wasn't feasible.
Yeah, no.
So I came home, and the lessons that I learned in your country, I applied them here, and it made all the difference in the world.
That's awesome. Yeah, Canada is our second largest listener base. So obviously America is number one. Canada is number two. Believe it or not, India is number three.
And, hey, then, right,
and then the United Kingdom is number four. So.
Oh, really? India before the United Kingdom. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually comedy is growing in India. It's becoming a bigger and bigger thing. There's a lot of great comedians out of there. I just went blank. Verdaz, I think is the name.
What? Speaking truth to power.
Yes. Yep.
You have to tip the apple cart. You have to strip the veneer away and get to the kernel of the spin that you're being fed.
Yep.
I like to know that people are leaving my theater feeling a heck of a lot lighter leaving than they were coming in.
Yep.
I think it's our job to lighten the load, not throw another brick on there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of good comedians coming out of India. It's growing there. One of the big ones, if you haven't heard of him, is Virdaz. I think I'm saying that right. V-I-R-D-A-S. He had a great Netflix special, and then he did one from his house the whole time. He kept doing shows on Zoom that were free because he wanted to help people kind of get out of depression and get out of being upset. And
how many did he do?
Oh, I don't know. It was a lot. He did a ton of them. He recorded
right
them. He did, like, one every day for, like, the year. Like, he was
– What?
Yeah, he was amazing.
What?
Yeah.
Were they all funny?
Yeah, they're funny. It's called Inside Out and Outside In are the two different ones. One on,
wow,
on Netflix is Outside
That's
In. And so he was doing it on Zoom and having conversations with people and, you know, trying to help people get over stuff. And because he was doing it from India, you know, they could be all over the world. So he had people from, like, Japan and America and France.
You don't have the technical know-how for that. I did I did half a dozen here. Yeah. I did my big show on New Year's. We did 3,500 people, and then I did another one in March. I might be doing another one in a month. Boy, for him to just tune it, that's incredible.
Yeah, and then he edited it all together and made a one-hour special that got released on Netflix. So.
Okay, it couldn't have all been great then. That's a bummer.
Everything I saw was really well done. And
he
I mean,
read the phone book.
Yeah, no, he was great. He was great. Fantastic.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I do really, if anyone's listening and you know him, and I would love to have him on because it's genius. And the fact that he did that to help people with
what a generous, with good soul.
Yeah.
That's pretty magnanimous, brother.
Yeah.
Right. To literally personify, we're all in this together.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. That's exactly
like
the way, Phil.
Excellent.
So, well, where can people find you? Where can they find more of your comedy, all your tour and stuff? Go ahead and shout that out and where they can follow you on.
Well, right now, we're up in the air. I hope the tour happens. I'm through Ontario, Canada. And my new book that's coming out, it's going to be available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble in the States. But it's published by Penguin Random House. And it's called All Over the Map, Rambles and Ruminations from the Canadian Road. And the subtitle's a little misleading because it deals an awful lot with my years in America, too. Mm-hmm. Perspective on showbiz. Stories about home, stories about the first time I met Americans when I was a kid, stories about uncles, and it's universal. And it's a perspective from the comedy trenches of somebody who's in the business for a long time. Perfect. And there's an audio recording too. You'll be able to get on Amazon if you want that, or I read it. So it's all good. And I'm on Facebook. You can check me on Facebook and on Instagram.
Yeah, and then ronjames.ca, right, is the website.
That's my website, yeah. Yeah, I'm just punching that up now. I have some new some new sketches from the old show. But you can catch me all over YouTube. I'm all over there.
Yeah.
And
we'll put the links, all the links in the show notes, too.
Hey, so I appreciate that. Right on. Yeah, it's been a struggle for a lot of us, but we're managing to do what we can with what we've been given. Yeah. And to marshal whatever resources we can in order to move forward. That's what I'm doing anyway.
Yeah. So anybody who's listening, Ron's book comes out on September 28th on Amazon. So you'll be able to get it then. You can pre-order now if you want to.
Go to the Penguin Random House site.
Yeah.
And that's your best bet right there.
Perfect. And Luke, where can people find you at?
Luke LaCoy on the internet. And Ron, I look forward to reading your book.
I know, yeah, we're going to
be very excited about it. Luke, yeah.
Best of luck with the first baby. That's a happy time of life.
Thank you. Yeah.
Don't plan on getting any sleep for a year.
Ron knows what's up. That's how you do it. That's
nice talking to you.
So, all right. And you can find me at jamesdcrevison.com or go to comedypreneur.com. Please check out the YouTube. Please check out the podcast. Leave us some reviews and follow us on YouTube. We want to get to 1,000 subscribers. We're not there yet. You guys are listening massively on the podcast and the audio. Come look at our beautiful face. Okay, come look at Luke's beautiful face and my ugly face and enjoy the entertainment we provide for you. Okay, thank you guys so much. Thank you, Mr. James, again for this. I appreciate it.
Thank you, good guys. Thanks a million.
Thank you guys. Thank you everybody for listening and have a good one. Bye.